Welcome to Hogtails, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Janine Mercer, and as usual, I am joined here by the lovely and talented...
Mimi Steven. Hello, everybody.
She always pauses whenever I add something a little bit extra because she doesn't want to seem pompous.
I have to think about it.
She's a slow thinker. She's like, somebody is calling me lovely and talented. This doesn't happen every day.
No, not at all.
It should happen every day, Mimi.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Ack. Yeah.
So how are you, Janine?
I'm doing all right. I am powering through it.
Good.
Digging through the shite, as it were.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah. I'm enjoying this gorgeous weather we've had.
The last
few days. It's just beautiful out.
Yeah, it is. It's been very nice. It's been nice weather for mowing the lawn, mm-hmm. doing yard work. I've appreciated that very much because some days, you know, it's like 82 or 84 degrees right. and mowing.
And ugh. The humidity. The humidity can get so thick. But do you remember the night before last night when we had a storm roll through?
Yes.
I was in the studio late at night, and a huge clap of thunder and lightning right by the open door.
Oh.
And I was like, and it was just one.
Just Mother Nature reminding you.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Oh, but I love watching storms through them.
Yeah, the big door. Because
there's like this garage door that opens up into the studio.
Yeah.
So I keep it up when it's nice, and I can sit and watch when storms roll through. It's just great.
Yeah, I'm still scratching from the pizza date that we had.
Oh, that was fun.
The skeeters really like me.
Yeah. Lots of mosquitoes around.
Yeah, I probably could have stayed there until like, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning. Just talking. Yeah.
We had a good time.
Yeah, it was good.
We have to do that again.
It was good. And we had pizza with pineapple and Canadian bacon, and it was awesome.
Yes, it was
awesome. I love that shit. Did I tell you that the creator of that passed away fairly recently? The creator of the Hawaiian pizza?
No. Oh, yes, you did.
He was Canadian?
Yeah.
Yeah, passed away.
Yeah,
you did tell me. Part of our Canadian history. A Canadian history moment.
We have a really good... If you like Chinese, do you like Chinese?
I don't even think like love covers it.
Okay, because we have a really good Chinese place over in that little shopping mall that's there. We could do Chinese one night.
King's Walk?
Yes. Oh, it's so good.
It is good. Really now, good. Now, I haven't had from the actual menu. I've only had from the buffet.
Oh, no. The buffet is... You have to get
lackluster.
Fresh made.
Okay.
Fresh made is so good.
I had a friend at Stritch when I worked at the Dean of Students office that used to go to King's Walk all the time and pick up the buffet. And you could get like 4 different things and a soda for like $10.
Right.
I mean, it was ridiculous. And it tasted pretty good.
And the buffet is good, but
Fresh
made is even better.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of I'm a fish snob, and I'm also kind of a Chinese food snob because where I come from, they do Chinese a certain way. So, like, in egg rolls, there's a little bit of cinnamon in egg rolls. I recently gave Mimi some egg rolls that we made at the house, and I don't think
I haven't eaten them yet. I do this. I buy, like, my favorite ice cream, and I want to save it from when I really want it.
Yeah, she's...
And my kids always eat it. So, I'm saving the egg rolls for a real special moment.
She's waiting.
I know I'm going to love them.
She's waiting for a time when there's nobody else home and she can just eat them herself, I think. That's what...
I'm waiting for the perfect moment.
That's what's happening.
So, yeah. I'm very odd about food. I am one of the strangest people I know.
but so there's... The egg rolls there have cinnamon in them. Mm-hmm. And they kind of look like little pouches. They're, like, crimped at either end. They're not, like, actual rolls. They're, like, kind of little pouches.
Like little raviolis?
Bigger, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're like egg roll sized, but they look more like a ravioli than they would like a fried ravioli. But yeah, really good, and they put a little bit of, I think they put a little in a little bit of cinnamon and a little bit of Chinese five spice. Okay. The last time I was home, there's a lady named Sue who works there. Hi, Sue, if you're listening, you're probably not listening. You would probably never listen to this, but her dad used to run Lucky's Restaurant on Topsail Road prior to her running it, and I believe he's retired now. Uh-huh. So the last time that we were in there, we were like kind of poking and prodding her because she knows my stepmother. My stepmother used to work there.
Okay.
And it's a very small place. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody right. calls your friend. Yeah. So we were kind of poking and prodding her and saying, you know, well, what's in the egg rolls? You know, yeah. Hey, yo, Sue, hook us up. Yo, come on. And she was like, no, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. And I was like, well, like, is it cinnamon? And she was like, I'm not going to tell you. I was like, okay, if we get it, say nothing. And Joanne was like, is it Chinese five spice? And she said nothing. And I was like, there's Chinese five spice in it. Yes. Motherfucker. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a little game we played with Sue the last time we were there. I don't think she was too thrilled about it, but it was fun for us.
People don't like to give up their secrets.
Well, no, and I mean, you know, it's a family business. It's the only restaurant that they have. Like, I don't know how many places you can actually buy Chinese five spice in Newfoundland. I don't know that it's that readily available, but, you know, maybe if you went to, like, one of the little, like, Chinese grocery stores or something, you could find it, because they have a couple downtown, I think.
Ooh, we should go sometime.
That you could go to downtown St. John's to get Chinese five spice?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. No, they have lots of places here. Yeah, they have tons of places here, too. Pacific Produce. There's one around here somewhere pretty close. They have a whole selection of, like, candy, like, desserts and stuff like that from China.
Oh, wow.
And you can go in there and just, like, coolers and coolers and coolers filled with it. And, like, lots of weird, like, food options and, like, different kinds of, like, kimchi and, very interesting.
What's a kimchi?
I think it's, like, a cabbage.
Oh.
But it comes in, like, lots of different flavors and different spice levels.
Oh, wow.
This is like a veggie, kind of like a giardiniera. We call it gonorrhea. But it's giardiniera.
Oh,
it's
with you want to eat that, huh?
There's cauliflower in it, there's onion, there's carrot, there's celery, I think, in giardiniera. And it's all packaged in, like, pickle together.
Oh.
So it's kind of like a pickled vegetable. Kind of thing. You can put it on hot dogs. You can put it on sausages. You can put it on pork chops. It's really good on pork chops. You can do a lot of different things with giardiniera. And I'm assuming you could probably do similar things with kimchi. Because, you know, similar ingredients. But
have you ever eaten at Yenching? On 76 in Good Hope?
Wait. Is that the place that looks kind of like a pagoda?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have eaten there.
And they have really good cashew chicken. Well, the original owners in the last 2 years sold it to the people who have it now. And it's not as good, but it's getting better, actually.
Oh, okay.
And the
because I know when I walked in, they had stuff on the walls that said that they were like top, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, the original owners who knew me very well.
Yeah, you were probably there like 3-4 times a week.
Well, no. Once a week on Saturdays, but we ordered a lot. They have amazing egg rolls and cashew chicken to die for.
See, I wasn't keen on the egg rolls.
I
always try the egg roll because I want to know, you know.
I like the phyllo dough egg roll shell.
Yeah, the kind of crispier.
Yeah. But, have you tried Hong'an and Mekwan?
No.
That's kind of good. No. They have really good sweet and sour.
The only place that I have tried that I have been like, wow, this is really, really good Chinese is, I think it's called like the Golden Dragon in Waukesha.
Never been.
It's right next to an antique mall that I have also come to enjoy very much.
Oh, we should go.
We'll have to go sometime.
You're getting me hungry now.
It's like 1 o'clock right now, and we haven't had lunch yet, so
yeah.
We're trying not to plateau on the air. So our blood sugar is failing.
Yeah. Did you know that cinnamon helps control high blood pressure?
I think I did.
It lowers.
Because you can take little pills for it, like little supplements. Mm-hmm. They're in like little, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I usually take the supplements. Just
don't, whatever you do, don't take like a spoonful of cinnamon. Because then you're doing the cinnamon challenge and you're not actually taking anything for your own benefit.
Mm-hmm. No, I have supplements that I take.
Yeah. Because that, you know, when you do that, it actually sucks all the moisture out of your mouth at the same time. And it's kind of spicy because it's cinnamon. And, yeah, if you've never seen, like, videos of people.
I've seen it on YouTube, people taking it, and it's like,
yeah,
that's nuts.
It's pretty funny. I think it's funny because it's somebody else suffering that I can laugh at. That's why I think it's funny. Because it's like, haha, look at you, were stupid. I would never be that stupid and put that in my mouth. Ha ha ha. I'm laughing at you. Yeah. Laugh at your expense. I laugh in your general direction.
I can't believe it's Friday already.
Oh, that's right. It is Friday. I got weirded out because the wife was home. And I was like, wait, is it Saturday?
Didn't she say she was off on Thursday?
She said she was going to take a half day on Thursday. And then she only took... like 3/4 of a day. She came home a little bit early.
Is she feeling all right?
Yeah, she's feeling fine. It's just, you know, she's trying to use up vacation time. Okay. And I think she said that a certain amount of her vacation will roll.
And some won't.
So that'll be nice. Yeah. But yeah, some of it, I guess, doesn't. And so she has to use a certain amount. And she's been where she's been for a while. So she has a fair bit of vacation that's, you know, she gets every year. So it's a struggle to try to use it because I think she gets like 4 weeks or 5 weeks or something. It's insane, like an insane amount of vacation she gets.
Good.
So she tries to like come home early some days and like some days during the week she just like she'll take a Wednesday for like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, so I'm gonna be home on Wednesday for the next 4 weeks, you know, or a Thursday or whatever. It's not usually a Friday. I think that's because on Friday, a lot of other people aren't there. Mm-hmm. And so she feels like she should be there because there's no one else there.
Right.
You know, she works at a college. So, you know, I mean,
right.
You kind of want to have people there to answer like questions about college life and, you know, whatever, courses and shit.
Right.
So, yeah. So let's see. What do we have this week? I have Spring-Heeled Jack Victorian Boogeyman.
Can't wait to hear.
Fascinated by this guy.
Cool.
Just fascinated by him. He he seems to appear and disappear as quickly as he has materialized.
Hmm.
Fascinating stuff. What do you have?
I have kind of a story from China.
Oh.
And
okay.
It's something that I want to expand my search is on. I don't know if you ever on Netflix have somehow gotten onto Korean or Asian or Chinese ghost stories, movies. I have found that I really enjoy them. I like not the ones where it's supposed to be like a horror story and the jerky camera movements. Can't stand that. But the stories,
you probably have never seen Dark Water, then. That is an amazing movie.
I have not seen it.
I would consider it more of a thriller.
Okay.
But it does have some mild horror elements in it, jump scares and whatnot.
Well,
but they did an American version of it, too. But it was originally, I think, from Japan.
Okay, then I never saw the Japanese, but I probably heard of the American one. Mm-hmm. But, so I'm kind of on this kick right now, and
like I really my enjoy kick.
The stories. Yeah, like your documentary. Yeah. I really like the stories. They're just, they're romanticized a little bit more than what we do.
Yeah.
So I started with this one guy, and I think I want to expand a little bit more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was totally gonna do a creature from Chinese folklore this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
oh, is that funny?
So I sent Mimi a message, and I said, I want to write about this character from Chinese folklore. It is called, I am pretty sure, an ass wang. Can we get through an entire episode with me repeatedly saying the word ass wang? See? And not burst out laughing because we're 12-year-old boys.
Yeah. Ass wang.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like that's the way that the entire episode would have been.
Reminds me of Wayne's World.
What
shwing!
About? Oh, shwing. Yeah. Yeah, it's... So, I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. So then I did Springheel Jack instead. Because it kind of plays into my love of the Victorian era. And, you know, all of the just weird and crazy shit that was happening then. And all the amazing stuff that was happening at the same time. So, yeah. I don't know. That's kind of where it went.
There's a show on Netflix that I can't remember the name. But it's set in the Victorian era. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a horror slash ghost story series. Oh. I'll have to think of the name.
Yeah, shoot.
But I haven't finished it. Penny Dreadful. I've only watched the first few episodes.
You know what? I saw like 3 or 4 episodes of that and could not get into it.
Yeah, well, I saw like 3 or 4 and I haven't gone back. But
maybe I should give it like a season and then see.
Yeah.
What happens?
Because I like it, and I haven't gotten back into it. But maybe we should do a movie a marathon of Penny Dreadful.
Oh, Penny Dreadful. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
When we have nothing going on, which hasn't happened.
Right. Well, you know, we still have to make time to go wander around in the woods.
So. Yeah, that's more important than TV.
Yeah, that's very important. It's very important because we've been talking about it for some time and people have just been patiently waiting.
How about next Saturday
night? And have not sent me shitty emails, which I appreciate. Thank you.
Next Saturday night.
Okay.
All right.
We will go wander through the woods and find some fucking ghosts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Will Joanne come, too?
Maybe.
I think Bill will come.
I don't know.
We could have fun.
She will. Yeah.
Go to late dinner and then...
Mm-hmm.
We could bring a picnic basket and eat in the woods.
Bring a picnic basket.
All right.
Hey, boo-boo. Yeah. Get the pick in the basket, boo-boo.
We're crazy. I'm going first this time.
You're going first this time?
Yes.
I love the fact that you're so amped up about the stuff that you have to talk about that you like actually want to go first. Well, this is really like a turning point in our relationship, I feel.
Actually, what I have is just a very little. It's
This is totally related to the fact that we need food. Like, that's why this is going so well right now. And you're like, no, I'll go first. Well, because your blood sugar is low.
Well, I think your story is going to be really interesting. So I want to get mine.
I'm hoping. So. Fucking fingers crossed. It'll be interesting.
All right. So go. My story stems from this guy, Gan Bao, which I'm sure I'm brutalizing his name. I apologize.
It's probably not Ass Wang either.
Okay, so he was, Gan Bao was a writer in China. He wrote down supernatural tales that he heard way back in, he lived from 315 AD, and he died somewhere around 336 AD.
Hmm.
So, I'm going to say a quote that I was reading in my research, and this is actually a quote from Motsu in 783 BC. So since the beginning of time, men have seen the bodies of ghosts and spirits and have heard their voices. So how can we say they do not exist? Only if none had seen or heard them can we say they truly don't exist. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I give credence to.
Yeah, yeah.
So often in Chinese culture, a ghost is the spirit of a person who has died. And very often in Chinese culture, it's somebody who's angry and out for revenge against a person who has wronged him or her in life. It's also believed that with the help of a medium, I guess the Chinese people really believe in mediums and that they can help you communicate with the dead.
Right.
And they really respect the spirits of the dead in their culture. So the deceased loved are able to help the living if they are respected. Okay, so Gan Bao, who's a writer in China, from 315 AD to somewhere around 336 AD, he tells a story from his family. And his father had died. And apparently his mother knew that his father was having an affair with their housemaid. So when the father died, unbeknownst to the rest of the family, she took that maid and enclosed him in his in the tomb with the father while she's still alive.
Oh, what do we call that?
What?
What do we call it?
I don't know.
Immurement.
Oh, immurement.
He was immured.
Yes, with the dead father. And
not in a nice way.
No. And nobody else knew, and being entombed in stone, you know, nobody could hear it screaming.
Right, yeah. Like I said before, if somebody forgets about you, you're basically just fucked.
So 10 years later, the mom dies, and the family goes to inter her. Hmm. And when they open up the door, what do you think they find?
Probably
a dead maid, right? You would think that, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, him and a dead maid. Yeah.
Nope, she was alive.
After how long?
10 years.
Oh my God.
So
oh, she wasn't eating him, was she?
No. She wasn't eating him.
I'm sorry, I don't know if you're still on this creepy kick that you were
so
on. So preparing myself.
So so they found her still alive. And she said that Gang Bao's father, his spirit, brought her food and water, keeping her alive for many years.
Interesting.
And that's all they had on this little story. Apparently, he had written a book, something about spirits, but a lot of the tales that he wrote down have gone missing somewhat.
Mm.
But one of the stories that he had written down was about Li Qi, a young woman, very young woman. She was like 15 or 16, I think.
Oh, okay.
Who volunteered to be sacrificed to a dragon so that the dragon could be killed. So every year in this little town in China, a young maiden had to be given to a dragon so that the dragon would not go and torch the village, which is also a story you hear in Nordic tales.
Mm-hmm.
So Li Qi, she was the youngest of six daughters born to poor parents. She said to her parents one day, "Dear parents, you have no one to depend on, for having brought forth only six daughters and not a single son. It is as if you were childless," I think I meant to write. "Since I am of no use to you, I cannot take care of you in your old age. I only waste your good food and clothes. Since I am no use to you alive, why shouldn't I give up my life a little sooner? What could be wrong in selling myself to gain a bit of money for yourselves?" Her parents were horrified that she said that to them. And they loved her. They loved all their children.
Right.
But Li Qi, she had a little plan in mind for the dragon. And she gave herself up, and what she did was she brought a dog with her to this cave where the dragon sleeps, and she brought sugared rice balls, sugar seasoned rice balls, and a sword. So she left the rice balls at the beginning of the cave. And when the dragon awoke, something smelled good. So he starts munching on the rice balls. And then the dog goes running out, biting and barking at it. And while the dragon's busy with the dog, she jumps on his back, stabs him through the heart, and the dragon dies. So she saved the village. So the villagers were so, taken with her that she saved them, that they made her queen of the village. And so her family became wealthy and prosperous, and all was good and right with the world. And that's all the story I have. But I love those kind of stories. But what's interesting, I don't know if you found in different religions or whatever, how so many stories just interconnect with stories from other places. Yep. And I've heard this tale in different places, like I said, in Nordic stories. And it's just interesting. And the Chinese stories always seem so vibrant and alive. And the pictures that it had to go with were really intriguing too, you know. So I love those kind of stories. So I'm going to research more. But I told you it was a real short one. So.
Still, I mean, very, very neat to explore the folklore of other cultures. It's probably my second favorite thing to do next to writing research papers is to sit down and find, you know, I mean, like, when I found that that ghoulish character, that I'm sure it's probably like Aswang. It's probably not Aswang.
Yeah.
It's probably not what it is. But I was like, wow, you know, this is really interesting, because it's like this ghoulish creature that can inhabit other people and make them do things.
Right.
And so it's like that one culture's response to the question, why do good people do bad things?
Right.
And it's the same with, like, certain urban legends. You know, you have good things, you know, or good people having bad things happen to them. And the question is, why do bad things happen to good people?
Right.
And that's, I mean, it's not only just a question that people ask in general, it's a question that people ask of the higher power that they believe exists.
Right.
You know, I mean, why do bad things happen to good people? You know, why do people die young? Why do, you know, why does the person who, you know, asks somebody to, you know, do something for them in exchange, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, no, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that person who was generous in the first place gets shafted, and then, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, lots of, you're very, that's correct. There are a lot of cultures out there that have similar stories. And there are stories about perseverance. Like, I don't know if you know the story about the crow and the container of, I believe it's cream. And so he wants to get into this container of cream, but he can't reach all the way to the bottom because the container is too deep. So what he does is he starts to take pebbles. He drops them one after the other in the container, and eventually the cream is at the level where he can drink it.
Oh.
And it's all about, you know, perseverance and, yeah, I mean, lots of like little
very
parables.
Cute story.
And, or the story about the lion that has the thorn in its paw.
Yeah.
And the tiny little mouse has to come and help him get the thorn out of his paw. You know, the people who have the greatest strength often also need help. You know, and it doesn't take the strongest person to help the strongest person. It just takes somebody who cares.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, lots of little parables and lots of, like, you know, lots of meaningful information. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's very cool.
You want to know my favoriteest fairy tale?
What is your favoriteest fairy tale?
Well, when I was a little girl, I used to have this book of fairy tales. And the book's been lost for many years, but I cannot find the same book anywhere. So, in the very last fairy tale of this book is the story of the little prince, the princess, and the strawberry. And there's a little, actually it was a princess and a little blind boy and a strawberry.
Okay.
So there's a poor little blind boy who lives on a little farm, and he tends to his garden every day. And one day he hears that the princess is going to come and visit his house. So he decides he's going to grow her the best gift in all the world, a strawberry. So he asks the sun to come and feed the strawberry. He asks the rain to come and water the strawberry. Yep. And he asks the birds to leave it alone. And he tends it, and he lovingly cares for it. And by the time the princess comes, he's got this beautiful, juicy strawberry. And he says to the princess, "Princess, I have a gift for you." And he gives the little princess, you know, the pictures are so beautiful, to the princess. And it was the best gift she ever got. And she gives him a little kiss. And it's just the sweetest little story.
See, I grew up on Grimm's fairy tales. And the folklore.
Yeah.
You know, about the hag and...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you get told stories like that, too, but...
I love those. But this little story is just the sweetest thing ever, and the pictures are so beautiful.
The literally the only cutesy thing that I remember about my childhood in regards to, like, fairy tales and whatever, the only cutesy thing is a little poem about giants, and I remember it. And it goes something like, when giants get sneezes and coughs and diseases, they ought to stay home and keep warm. Because gigantic sneezes will blow down our trees and whip up a terrible storm. And that's the only thing that I remember that's cutesy.
I love it.
Everything else is like, and then Hansel and Gretel pushed the witch into the oven. And then Little Red Riding Hood chopped up the wolf with the axe. Yeah. And we wonder why we're sitting in a room filled with taxidermy and dead bugs. We wonder about this. It's curious. Curiouser and curiouser. Yeah, so.
And Aesop's Fables, oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah, I used to like those,
wonderful
too.
Stories.
Yep. Yep. My favorite book when I was a kid was a book called Angus and the Cat. And it was a story about little Scotty Dog and this little black cat that keeps stealing his little patch of sunshine. In the house, and eventually they come to an agreement at the end. But it's very cute. Joanne actually gave me, she actually gave me a copy of the story, not in the original book it was in. I forget if it was for like a birthday or like for Christmas or something like that. Nice. But I remember I got it wrapped up and I opened it and I was like, oh, that's so cute. And I started to cry because I remembered the book. Yeah. And I actually think, yeah, it's over there. The best in the corner with the yellow binding on the bottom.
Oh, yeah, I see.
So, like I said before, I have Spring-Heeled Jack, Victorian Boogeyman.
Cool.
The Spring-Heeled Jack story is kind of all over the place. He's been seen in a lot of different places. He's been seen in England, he's been seen in America, he's been seen in Canada. A lot of people seem to think that he is the creature that people keep seeing in Point Pleasant when they say that they see the Mothman, because of the glowing red eyes and the ability to leap tall structures.
Okay.
The other speculation was that he was also, he was one and the same with a creature called the Black Flash, who was seen in America in between the times that he was actually seen in England, so it was theorized that he had moved.
Oh.
And gone somewhere else. And yeah, so anyway, there's a lot of speculation surrounding it, and it's kind of an interesting little story, so. I hope that you guys enjoy it. Because I enjoyed writing it. Because I enjoy writing things. Okay. In Victorian England, no mythical creature was more frightening to people, or more sensationalized than Spring-Heeled Jack. Some claimed he was a devil, a creature who could jump unnaturally high and was abnormally agile, while others believed that he was a human being hiding beneath a mask and a cloak. Jack mainly attacked women, ringing the doorbell and tearing their clothes to shreds when they answered. The only injuries reported during this time are scratches and cuts from his claws, described by many as long, sharp talons. John Cowan, Lord Mayor of London at the time, made a statement to the public asserting that he believed that the attacks were perpetrated by a gang of wealthy thugs and dismissed any supernatural elements that most of the reports contained. Cowan's written statement was also published in the Times, and I have his written statement here. It appears that some individuals of, as the writer believes, the highest ranks of life, have laid a wager with a mischievous and foolhardy companion that he does take upon himself the task of visiting many of the villages near London in three different disguises, a ghost, a bear, and a devil. And moreover, that he will not enter a gentleman's gardens for the purpose of alarming the inmates of the house. The wager has, however, been accepted, and the unmanly villain has succeeded in depriving seven ladies of their senses, two of whom are not likely to recover, but to become burdens to their family. At one house, the man rang a bell, and the servant, coming to open the door, this worse than a brute, stood in no less dreadful figure than a specter clad most perfectly. The consequence was that the poor girl immediately swooned, and has never, from that moment, been in her senses. The affair has now been going on for some time, and, strange to say, the papers are still silent on the subject. The writer has no reason to believe that they have the whole story at their finger ends, but, through interested motives, are induced to remain silent. So that's just kind of interesting. I thought it was neat. Now, Cowan's appeal fell on deaf ears, and the papers of London started to report all of these grandiose tales of Jack's exploits. We were just talking about Penny Dreadful. Mm-hmm. Penny Dreadfuls, little magazines that were a penny each, were created. They were printed telling of England's newest boogeyman, so they very much sensationalized it. And Jack was used as a tool to scare children into behaving for their parents. And the Catholics actually told tales of Jack to curb their parishioners' enthusiasm for spirits. So they said that if you get drunk and you imbibe to excess, then Jack is going to come. And yeah, because I guess he was most popularly spotted by churches or on churches and around pubs.
But he just stripped women.
He shredded their clothes. Yeah.
Did he?
No, he didn't. They answered the door.
That's just weird.
They answered the door and he shredded their clothes and then he ran away.
Okay.
Or jumped away, in this case. So as far as sightings are concerned, Springhill Jack was first seen in 1837 in the Black Country, an area in the West Midlands. It is said that a woman was attacked by Springhill Jack and that her blouse was torn off and her stomach scratched violently. The individual, creature, entity, demon, whatever it might be, then leapt away. Police asked the woman what the individual looked like, and she claimed that it was a man wearing a cloak with long razor-like fingernails. When the papers began to publicize the attack, many more people came forward claiming to be victims of this supposed crazy man. It wasn't until the first publicized attack that people told of their experiences because they were afraid that people would question their sanity. The newspapers sensationalized the story, creating mass hysteria. Armed vigilante groups patrolled the streets at night and even encountered what they believed to be Springhill Jack on more than one occasion during their excursions. Individuals pretending to be Springhill Jack became commonplace. Many took to the streets in an effort to gain attention for themselves or to scare friends and family. However, they could never catch the actual Springhill Jack because as soon as they would come upon him, he would leap onto a rooftop or over a fence and be out of sight in a blink. A year later, a young woman was attacked by an individual who breathed blue flames at her, likely making this one of the worst cases of acid reflux in history. Terrible. Many more people came forward claiming that they had also seen a creature that breathed blue flames and could jump extremely high. Descriptions of the individual were so varied that it was impossible to obtain an accurate description of the suspect. In some cases, Jack looked like a devil with short horns and a pointed beard, so like the typical, like, quote-unquote, devil. In others, he resembled something closer to human, wearing some sort of like a white oiled skin suit or something, and like dressed up very well. That's the reason why they thought that it was a well-to-do person causing mm-hmm. all this drama, because he was dressed so well. The only common threads in all of these stories were the long talons and the ability to jump to great distances, great heights. Likely the most famous encounter with Spring-Heeled Jack happened to a woman named Jane. One night, Jane heard a knocking at her door. When she asked who was calling at such a late hour, a voice from the other side of the door claimed to be a police officer and demanded a light. The voice told Jane that she should hurry because they had caught Spring-Heeled Jack. Jane ran to get a candle and opened the door, but the figure that stood on the doorstep was not that of a police officer. The figure was that of a tall man with glowing red eyes. Before Jane could speak, he spat blue flames at her. The man attacked her, but Jane's sister, hearing the struggle from another room, rushed in and scared the man away. A short time later, a woman named Lucy Scales was out walking with her sister at night. She reported that a man jumped out of the shadows and spat blue flame into her face. Scales' sister claimed that the act caused Lucy to have some sort of seizure and fall to the ground. Both ladies reported that the man was tall, lean, and wearing some sort of tight-fitting white outfit. On his head, he wore a strange helmet, and his eyes were two balls of flame. Scales' encounter helped to shape the image of Jack as this gentlemanly devil. And after this encounter, Spring-Heeled Jack disappeared. So then the next time they see him is the 1870s. People in the English countryside began seeing Spring-Heeled Jack and became victims of attacks. Village people set up traps. They patrolled at night. They desperately tried to catch whoever was attacking the locals, but all of these efforts were in vain. And again, Jack disappeared. Shortly after that, people began seeing a similar creature or individual in Kentucky, and it is believed that Jack had made his way to America. There's a lot of personification of this kind of demon entity that is like traveling like a man. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's just, you know, he's going on a little trip. He's going to go here and he's going to go there and, you know, whatever. Kind of like serial killers have victims mm-hmm. in different places because they travel around. You know, they use the expressways and cross state lines and stuff like that. The description of Jack by those who had seen him were similar of those of the reports in England. But people in America said that Jack shot flames out of his chest and not his mouth. It is at this point that the tales of Spring-Heeled Jack disappeared for some time, and there were no further attacks in Kentucky, and reports of sightings dwindled and disappeared altogether.
So blue flames never came out of his butt?
Apparently not. No, he doesn't have any sort of diarrheal affliction that okay. would cause him to... Worst case of food poisoning in history. Ate some bad Indian food.
Jalapeno Ooh. Peppers.
Man, oh man. Jalapeno. All right.
Hello.
In Onestique, in 1939, people in Cape Cod began to report strange sightings. The creature's ability to disappear and reappear at random, leap to great heights, and move very quickly really freaked people out, naturally. This particular creature was known by locals as the Black Flash and was believed to be the devil incarnate. The creature would attack at random, brandishing long iron claws, and as quickly as it appeared, sightings of the creature ceased. Black Flash was also seen in Provincetown, Massachusetts around the 1930s. Two men were attacked by this individual and witnessed the Black Flash leaping over 8-foot fences. The last known sighting of the Black Flash in Cape Cod was in December of 1945. In 1973, a Canadian family was visited by Spring-Heeled Jack. They claimed that a visitor arrived on their doorstep one night, and when they answered the door, they were greeted by a pair of glowing red eyes and a tall, gangly stranger dressed in all black. Every time I see that description of a tall stranger dressed in all black, I flash to Slender Man. And I wonder how much of the folklore involving Slenderman and the Mothman and, you know, like these popular tales, glowing red eyes, whatever, are just bits and pieces of other legends that people have tacked together. Yeah, it makes you wonder. He had fingers topped with long, sharp claws. As quickly as he had appeared, he leapt away. The family explained that the visitor had reached heights of 50 to 60 feet in the air.
Wow.
Quite high.
Yep.
Yeah. In 1996, a police officer pursued a suspect who was seen jumping tall hedges in a residential neighborhood. The officer did manage to catch up to the individual, but before he could utter a word, he was punched in the face and knocked out cold. When the officer came around, he was told that he had been punched by Spring-Heeled Jack. Apparently, attacks like those were common in England in the 19th century. So, who is Spring-Heeled Jack? Who was he? Was Callan right to believe that, quote-unquote, the creatures that people saw were simply well-to-do jerkwads out to scare people for fun?
I bet that's how it started.
I mean, yeah. Like, reports of Jack are now few and far between, but some believe that reports of creatures, like I said, the Mothman in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, are actually sightings of Spring-Heeled Jack. So, I mean, are they one and the same? Or is it just picking and choosing what parts of the legends you want to add for creep factor?
Yeah. You know?
Makes you wonder.
Makes you wonder.
More things that make you go, hmm. Yeah.
Well, that was good.
So good. Yeah, good stories this week. We always come up with some interesting stuff.
Flame out of the chest instead of the rear end.
Out of the mouth. Out of the mouth.
Well, that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really sure where that came from. Yeah, I don't know if it was an actual, like, opening of clothing and shooting flames.
Yeah.
Like, one of them, like, shooting flames out of, like, his nipples or something. Like, what? Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but it really does, I mean, from all of the folklore and all of the legends that I have read, it really makes you wonder how much of it is authentic. I mean, obviously the stuff that's coming around very, very, very early on in Victorian England,
right?
That is probably more authentic.
Yeah.
But even those reports might have been fueled by something else or influenced by another culture, or, you know, maybe it was the telephone game gone wrong that, you know, somebody was like, well, I saw this and I saw that.
Well,
and then that person told somebody else and all of a sudden it's Spring-Heeled Jack and he can jump and has claws and
I can kind of see rich border school Victorian era or even earlier naughty kids
spreading rumors.
Well, even going to people's houses and doing nasty things.
Oh, that way.
You know, yeah. And I can see the tales starting from there and changing, and each telling is different. And then it does travel overseas, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. And, you know, like I said, Callan, that's what Callan thought it was. It was just well-to-do brats or jerkwads that were just going around freaking people out.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we still have that. We have people dressing up as clowns
and freaking people out. But the Mothman story is more violent than this is. So.
But it makes you wonder how much of that story was added.
Right.
Than to make it that way. Yeah. And you also have to consider that nowadays, if you go to a movie theater and you watch a horror movie and there's no blood, there's no gore, there's no, you know, there's none of this, like, horror movie, like, staple within that film, you kind of leave feeling like, yeah, that was a good movie. It was an okay movie, you know. But if there's all this extra stuff, all of this visual stimuli, then you leave the movie kind of like, whoa, that was, I mean, maybe it wasn't a good movie still, but you're like, whoa, that was really, like, that affected me. Like, that got to me.
Well, sometimes,
because we need more.
In certain stories, I feel that less is more.
Yeah. But see, that's generational, too, because I feel that way. But people of my generation would be like, no, I need more. I need somebody to add this. I need the visual stimuli. Because if I don't have it, then the story is obviously lacking something.
But the technology that they use today where they have the ghosts jerking forward.
Yes.
I can't stand that. I just, have they had the apparition slowly moving forward in a mist-like state?
Yeah.
Would bring me in more.
Well, I mean, like, so. I loved, one of my favorite films when I was in high school was The Blair Witch Project.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that film because you didn't get to see anything. You got to see what the camera allowed you to see.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very much. It was a bunch of scared American kids running around the woods.
Right.
Supposedly being chased by this creature, but you never saw the creature. Right. You heard the creature. And it was almost palpable, like you almost felt the creature, because it was so intense. But they never showed you anything.
Yeah.
Never. You never saw anything. You had a suggestion of what it might look like.
Mm-hmm.
You had, you know, townspeople doing, like, info documentary style, telling you what she looked like.
Right.
But you never actually got to see it. And that was part of it.
Right.
That was part of the whole experience of going to the theater and sitting down and watching this film.
Right.
And, I mean, there were people that, I mean, I listened to a podcast fairly recently, and, you know, probably about a month ago. Now that was from Faculty of Horror, and I absolutely love Faculty of Horror. I binge their episodes all the time. And the ladies were talking about the movie The Blair Witch Project. And the one lady, I think it was... Andrea Subisati, said that she was sitting in a college classroom and she was doing like some sort of presentation on film, and because they're big into horror movies and that's what they talk about. And she said that the Blair Witch Project was fake and it was, you know, I mean, they put it together for the purpose of it just being a fictional, like a horror movie. And she said this girl was sitting in the room and she stopped and she put her pen down and she looked up and she was like, that wasn't real. So she made it all the way. I mean, when did that come out? Like 98, 99? I think I graduated high school in 99. Yeah, because I feel like it was like 98, 99. Because I distinctly remember like getting home from school and being like, okay, I have to go to the cinema and I have to go and see, because it was opening weekend.
Yeah.
And I have to go and see this.
Did you see the second one?
I did. I wasn't real.
Yeah. The brother goes looking for her.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, 1999.
Okay.
Yeah. The Blair Witch Project still has its official site up. It's been 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, since James's sister and her two friends vanished in the Black Hills Forest of Maryland. But yeah, I mean, it's still a functioning website.
And they've done so many other movies with that style of photography and that style of viewing.
Yeah, 1999, they released The Blair Witch, and it was literally like the total package. It was a total movie experience. Mm-hmm. It was second only to when they released the movie The Tingler. In cinemas, I think it was in like the 40s or the 50s, and they actually, the movie house, whoever produced it, created these little buzzers and put them under people's seats randomly in the cinema, so that when the tingler came on the screen, I think it was like some sort of big fucking creepy centipede or something, they would buzz each of the seats individually, and people freak would be people screaming out. And that's freaking great. Out, because the tingler is coming, the tingler is coming, yeah. So
that's great.
But it's not necessarily something physical that they're using, but all of the psychological trauma that these people are experiencing in this film, it kind of spilled over into the cinema. And people, as they were leaving, they looked a little white because they were like, you know, I mean, we were in Newfoundland and people are generally pretty pasty anyway, so, you know.
1959 with Vincent Price.
1959.
Yeah.
Vincent Price. Yeah, Vincent Price was such an amazing guy.
When the screen screams, you'll scream too. If you value your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love those old movies. And
me too.
Just so great. And Vincent Price, I mean, come on. I feel like recently on this podcast, we've been talking about movies a lot.
I know.
Yeah. And we have a lot of the similar, a lot of similar likes and dislikes. Yeah, yeah. See, it was like a centipede looking thing. Creepy as fuck.
It sure is.
Oh. Now imagine sitting in a dark cinema and all of a sudden your seat starts to buzz. Oh my God.
That would be fun. I would enjoy that because it would scare the crap out of
me. It makes me wish that there were cinemas that still did that.
I know.
You know, like just real shitty, like cheapy cinemas where you could go in and watch films like The Tingler or the House on Haunted Hill or The Man with the X-Ray Eyes or The Invisible Man, you know, the Hammer horror films. Like, why don't we have that anymore?
The Donner don't. No, the Oriental used to have those. Oh. I don't know if they still do.
Yeah, I haven't looked recently, but...
Have you ever seen Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yes, I have.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We should go sometime.
Damn it, Janet, we should.
They still play it.
Damn it, Janet, we should. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, is that it for
this week? That's it for today. Gotta get on to other things.
We've just been kind of, rambling. It's the lack of food.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we will see you next week with some more cool, creepy, weird, wonderful stuff.
Stories.
Mm-hmm.
Peace out.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, guys, for listening. We will talk to you next time. And stay spooky. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews because your reviews will help us improve and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show. It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening and stay spooky.